Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, what an edition of the Gegenpod we've got lined up. Mark Schwarzer, Michael Bridges and Thomas Sorensen with their live reaction as we read out the Socceroos squad for their final match in Australia before heading to the World Cup in Qatar. No Premier League at the weekend, we break down what that unexpected interval could mean for the likes of Liverpool, Man United and some of the strugglers. Thomas Tuchel is out and Graham Potter is in at Chelsea. We've got Champions League results and we look at the start of the WSL season and the latest in La Liga as well. I'm your host, Teo Pellizzeri. This is the Optus Sport Football Podcast. Let's get into the Gegenpod. Yes, the first team is back in action on the Gegenpod. Whether they've been cycling or just enjoying a bit of a holiday or some football, we have Mark Schwarzer, Thomas Sorensen and Michael Bridges on the Gegenpod. Thomas, we need to start with you. Your cycling expedition, how did it go? Give us the rundown of where you've been and what it was all about.
Yeah, no, I was fortunate to do a small cycling trip from Barcelona to Rome. Amazing.
Small. Why is that? When has that ever been constituted as being small? Seriously?
Hey, I rode 6,000 kilometers across America, mate. So, this is just a little weekend trip. Now, we had a great trip. I managed to do a little sightseeing around the new camp in Barcelona, which was nice. Sadly, I missed a couple of games in Italy. We were just a day too early. But other than that, fantastic trip, hot weather. Enjoyed it fully. Great to be back, though.
How are you feeling? Do you bounce back straight away or do you need a couple of weeks to recover?
You know, the thing with this is actually the beginning that's hardest. You know, it's getting into it, riding. We did about 130 kilometers a day. So that's the tough bit on day three, day four. But then actually your body just gets used to it and the soreness goes away and it funnily enough gets easier as you go along. So I feel pretty good. It's more the jet lag now coming back to Australia that's the problem.
Great to hear. Mark Schwarzer, it's great to see you back as well. We may as well get into our best and worst of the weekend, and it was a bit of a different weekend. So what was your best moment of the weekend?
I mean, I was literally in a car all weekend driving down to Spain. So that's probably my best of the weekend, actually making it all the way down to Spain, having a great time, and finally being in a fantastic part of the world.
The jet-setting ways of our Gegenpod hosts, whether it's on the road, on a bike. Michael Bridges, your best moment of the weekend?
Well, it certainly wasn't cycling because I can't stand cycling because I get a sore arse. It's definitely not travelling as far as Swarty because I haven't got the money to travel like he has. So my highlight of the weekend, I'm going to take you to the Serie A match, and it was Juve. The last 9 minutes of their match, it was absolute bedlam. There was red cards, there was goals, there was VAR, and I just thought it was absolutely amazing. The final seals when Milik thought he'd scored the winning goal for Juve after coming back from 2-1 down and scoring two goals in the last minutes of the game. It was just great to watch, and it was great to see Allegri so animated on the sideline. But it was absolute bedlam, and with no football on in England, that was the main standout moment for me.
For me, I'll take it to Mark Schwarzer's home country, the Bundesliga in Germany. I think Union Berlin being top of the Bundesliga is the top story for me. I think what Urs Fischer has done there, winning at Cologne at the weekend, being unbeaten. You know, from where they come from in the second Bundesliga now, the third season, up, I think it's a tremendous rise that they have achieved. So for me, that's the highlight of the weekend.
Well, rather than ask for your worst moment, there was, of course, a sadness this weekend with the Premier League and all English football postponed. And that is, of course, due to the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. And now we're going to see football come back sporadically. Mark, was it the correct decision for all football in the UK to take a break this weekend as part of the mandated mourning period? Mm.
Look, I think in England it was inevitable, or certainly in Great Britain, I think that was always going to be the case. When you've had obviously the Queen of England, who's been reigning as the Queen for just over 70 years, completely understand it. And obviously for football fans, diehards, obviously it's a little bit disappointing not to have played football, but I think it's completely understandable as to why no games went ahead.
Yeah, it was a moment in history that some of us have never ever witnessed before. I was just saying there to Swarty before we got on, we're having a chat and just saying how it's an incredible, what the Queen had done, her reign, the culture over here and how many people admire this woman because she never broke any rules as such. She was an impeccable woman. She led the countries by example, and she's going to be very, very sadly missed. And I think it was very fitting that football did come to a standstill for this moment to see a moment in history. Because I mean, my kids really enjoyed seeing the chain, not obviously seeing the Queen die.
Really enjoyed it?
No, not enjoyed. But the moment of seeing the King being announced and what it went through, it was almost like going back in time to witness how much they did their thing. So it was fitting. Obviously, like Swarty said, the football. People that love watching it week in, week out, it just had to come to stand still for a main reason, because it was a massive moment in history.
I don't quite agree. I think, why should we not celebrate her life? Why can't we celebrate it with cheers? And, you know, it could have been done, you know, really respectfully around games. I think, you know, the passion and the national feel that fans have for their clubs and obviously for the Queen and for England, you know, why couldn't you have tied that in respectfully around the Premier League, around football in general? I just don't get why we sort of have to sit in a corner and sulk and why can't we do it in a positive way? I think it could have been done.
I agree with you.
With national anthem,
massive issue is the policing over here, for the amount of police that were involved in what has been going on for, and it's still going to affect the games going this weekend with Manchester United and Leeds United game being cancelled, and some of the games in London. So that there was a bigger picture everything.
And it got us a chance to enjoy La Liga a little bit this weekend rather than the Premier League, didn't it? Other than the fact that Cardiff lost at home to Barcelona. Aubameyang, 5 games, 5 losses. I need to have a chat with him because he lives 5 minutes up the road from my house. I'm going to get together with him, have a chat with him, and say to him, what the hell is going on at Cardiff?
Oh, I bet he can't wait for that.
I know.
We will get to La Liga, but Bridgie, you've touched on there, due to the police shortage, Chelsea versus Liverpool this weekend and Leeds versus Manchester United are both postponed, as is Brighton versus Crystal Palace, but that is due to a train strike. How disruptive is this going to be? And also the fixture knock-on effect, given that we already had a pretty compressed season with the World Cup break right in the middle. After coming off the back of COVID, this new problem, compounded by the World Cup, just it keeps adding up, doesn't it?
Certainly does. It was interesting having a chat with a couple of people from Leeds United Football Club today. They were saying, you know, the make-up games, they've got a perfect opportunity. The League Cup situation, FA Cups, depend on what, obviously, how far the clubs go in their cup competitions. Leeds United were saying that one game can be slotted in nicely, but obviously the backlog of the second game as well hasn't helped. And it just means, obviously, with the World Cup intervention as well, there is going to be an enormous disruption. But they will find a way. You know, the games will come thick and fast, and the players will want the games. Taylor, the only people it has really helped is the lads that have been injured. They've had an extra. Some of the players that have been at clubs that have had an injury, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, it's given them an opportunity to get themselves back. So there is like a bit of a positive and a shining light on that from a selfish point of view for some of the players that are after game time. But the teams that have had momentum going into the start of this season, it's just disrupted it completely.
Early in the season, you know, you just want to play games. And I think when you get to January, February, that's when, especially in England, you need
for
a break.
You're looking for,
can we just get a week off or something? But here, all the breaks are in the first half of the season. So that's my worry for it. It's going to be an issue.
It's a ploy. It's a ploy by the English Premier League just to make sure the English team are ready to go come the World Cup. Play as few games as they possibly can.
No excuses anymore.
Hard Premier League season. Can't. Oh, of course they're not going to win it. Now Bridgie can always sing the whole way through the tournament. It's coming home. Oh,
and geez, it certainly did with the Lionesses. There you go. Well, finally got to sing it for a reason.
That's the only team you can sing it with.
Who do you think will be the winners and losers out of this break? So no games this weekend for Liverpool, Man U, and then, of course, the international break. Is it Manchester United bad for them because they'd finally started to unlock some good form under Erik ten Hag? Or is this what Liverpool need, given that they had Champions League just this morning and now they get a bit of a break to try and recalibrate and fix their league form?
Yes, for both. Absolutely. I think for both of them, they'd be thinking, you know what? I would have rather have played games. Certainly for Manchester United, they would have wanted to continue one. For Liverpool, it's a little bit of that case, I think, of, right, we've got a little bit more time to work on the training field to make sure that we get things right. Because, let's be honest, they've been way off the mark, Liverpool. They've not lived up to expectation. There's a lot of question marks about the way they've been playing so far this season. So, you know what? I think tonight's result was a big result for them to win in the Champions League. I think, though, they want to take a little bit of time to get things right and make sure they get their season underway, certainly domestically.
Well, let's get to the big story that broke about 12 hours after we recorded the Gegen Pod last week, which was Thomas Tuchel sacked by Chelsea. By Friday, Graham Potter was in from Brighton and Hove Albion, Chelsea paying the release clause for him, which was about £16 million, I think. Bridgie, Thomas Tuchel's time is over. That feels like a long time ago now. Week's a very long time in football. Graham Potter's in. What do you make of the week Chelsea's just had?
Do you know what it is? I still can't get my head around it. I know there was three games that they hadn't got a result in, and watching their Champions League match, they did everything but score a goal. It was just incredible to witness and to think that he's... I still feel totally bewildered by it, and obviously Schwartz's been there and played there and understands the club. I thought his letter, I think it came out of the blue for Thomas Tuchel when he mentioned, you know, he was absolutely devastated, he didn't see it coming. You don't know, however, what's going on in the inner sanctum with some of the players and what they're like with Tuchel. They still didn't look as dynamic as they have done in previous seasons under him, but I think they've got an absolute diamond of a coach now, because Graham Potter was one of the managers that I had penciled in for a replacement to Gareth Southgate when England job comes up available. The job that he does seems to just be a constant, and he, you know, it's going to be fantastic to see him, what he can do with the Champions League team with all these big egoed players that are, you know, at the highest level, how he can handle that in his management style, and what kind of what changes he's going to make to the system after Tuchel.
The best thing about Graham Potter was that he's never been to a Champions League game, so his first event is going to be managing Chelsea at a Champions League. He said it in his press conference, didn't he, today?
It's mad, isn't it?
He's never, ever been to a Champions League game.
And they've got rid of a Champions League manager that won it.
I know. So it's incredible. I was surprised at how quickly they moved on getting rid of Thomas Tuchel. The only thing I can say is I agree with what Bridget is saying as well. It was alarming how much or how badly the form had changed for Chelsea. And so all you can go by is that internally there must have been a belief that either the players were no longer with the manager, he'd lost belief, and therefore a change was very, very necessary. But it is pretty strange. So quickly after the transfer window, spending so much money, and I'm sure that Thomas Tuchel had quite a bit of say in the type of players that came to the club as well. Graham Potter, very good manager, has coached very, very well at Brighton. Took some time, though, at Brighton to get things right, to get Brighton playing as well as they have. And this season seemed to be the season where Brighton may have, turned a few heads in the way that they've played and how far they could have gone. And the difference at Chelsea, he won't get the same time as he did at Brighton. So, interesting times ahead.
Yeah, I think it stems a little bit from, I think, probably Tuchel not seeing eye to eye with the new owner, Todd Boyle. I think, you know, at
he's
least
got a bit of past history with that, Tommy, hasn't he? He had a similar thing happen at PSG.
He had his PSG, yeah. You know, and it's always tough when that happens. A new owner potentially wants his own. But you know, the history talks against Graham Potter getting, you know, 4 or 5 years to get this right and build his own, like he's done at Östersunds in Sweden, and he's obviously done it at Brighton. But then you look at what Tobol has done with the Dodgers, and he's kept the manager there, the head coach for a long time, even though they've struggled in certain periods. So it sort of bodes well for him in some way, but I agree with Swartz here. I think the, you know, English media, the pressure from the fans, we're just in an era, especially when you're a top team, that you haven't got time. He has to produce from the first off. We saw it at Man United, the pressure is on straight away if you don't get results. So he needs to hit the ground running. For sure.
Graham Potter will be quite fine, because if he doesn't hit the ground running and he gets sacked, he can buy a house just as big as Mark Schwartz's down the road from him, because he will be absolutely rolling in it now.
At least the West Wing. At least the West Wing he can buy.
Yeah.
Thomas, it's great that you mention Potter's time at Östersund, though, because that's what put him on the map. He beat Arsenal at the Emirates in the Europa League, even though they went out of the tie.
Yeah, but who wasn't beating Arsenal on aggregate? Let's be honest.
Yes, fair enough, Shorty. But Mark, I wanted to ask, so Potter's got this reputation as a culture changer. He established it at Östersund. He brought it to Swansea. That's why Brighton hired him to replace Chris Hughton. How much does the manager change the culture? But then how much does the club change the manager? That tug of war, how's it going to work at a club like Chelsea?
Yeah, that's the big question. The only thing I'd say is that under new guidance, under new ownership, potentially there's a chance to mould the whole club into a different direction, right? So under the previous regime, I would have said absolutely no chance. That was not going to change. They had a system in place. They ran it in a certain way, and it was results-based. It was delivering trophies, and if you didn't, then basically not long afterwards, you were out the door. I think now there's an opportunity potentially, and one would hope that by appointing Graham Potter, you have the understanding that, look, it's about changing culture, about changing your style of football, and that may take a little bit of time, and you've got to be prepared to take the period of time where things may not go quite to plan. However, you've got to believe in the project. I don't know. If someone spent so much money like they have at Chelsea, the questions are, do they want an immediate return? Are they going to go along the same sort of lines as the previous regime? I'd like to hope not when you make that decision to bring Graham Potter in the club.
I was to throw this open to the floor. Can you remember an instance where a new manager's come in and has turned the club upside down before your eyes?
I think there's two clubs that stand out for me personally, Liverpool and Man City. I mean, Guardiola and Klopp, I think they turn the clubs on their head in recruitment, in work ethic, in direction and professionalism. I think the two of them changed it completely, both those clubs.
Yeah. I think Klopp also, what you're saying there, Swarty, Klopp got it as well with the fans. He'd come from the yellow wall in Dortmund. You understand what the cup was all about, and it was instant, like you see, to win them over as well as the player side. I've been involved here in a lot of clubs, a lot of clubs before Swarty gives us grief, yes, and seen managers come, and you've seen a manager try and do that kind of thing, and it didn't work. Bringing in new rules and regulations and trying to stamp the authority down, and the manner that it was done in the wrong way. And then you've seen other managers that'll embrace it. They'll listen to the players that are there, the leadership groups or the senior players, to see how it's gone before, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well, and take a bit more of a buy-in from some of the players and the coaching staff that are already there. And that I found that was an easier transition rather than coming in and really having a go, because when you try and change a culture completely, and I'm not talking about playing style, I'm talking about everything as a collective, you know, new rules, no newspapers in the physio department and things like that, it can really rub players up the wrong way and get you an instant dislike. So it depends how you approach that and handle it. It's all about the building relationships, I would say, these days, rather than trying to be a dictator.
Just quickly, I think Man United is an interesting one as well, because Man United tried to stay along the same lines with Moyes, got rid of him, brought Van Gaal in, and he tried to change everything, and it was such a big club and such a big change, it didn't really work.
Yeah, no, I think it shows that culture is in modern sport, not just football, but any sport. And if you want sustained success, I think a lot of it stems from the right people in charge, not just managers, but also owners and sporting directors. The whole way through, everyone is on the same page. And so I think from Chelsea's perspective, I think, you know, they're doing the right thing in trying to build it, but again, they need to follow through. Now they've given him the reins, potentially and everything that you hear is that it's a longer term plan. They need to follow through and believe in that project.
Let's talk about the club Graham Potter left, Brighton and Hove Albion. Ange Postecoglou actually opened the betting market as favourite to the job, but he's now blown out to 12-1, depending on where you look. Kjetil Knutsen, the manager of Bodo Glimt, who had that pretty amazing Conference League run that involved beating Roma in the group stages, he's now the new favourite. Interestingly, Nottingham Forest's Steve Cooper is 4-1. Other names on there, Nathan Jones, Brendan Rodgers, Scott Parker, Sean Dyche, of course. Bournemouth still haven't replaced Scott Parker permanently yet either. So, this manager race to become the new man in charge at Brighton, given the reputation of the club and the overall project that Graham Potter has been the beneficiary of, you'd think it'd be a pretty attractive gig.
What, for Ange to go when he's playing Champions League football?
Yeah, no. I understand that. And I understand why Ange wouldn't want to go there. However, in terms of the way they play football, that would be a perfect fit. Mm. Ange trying to play playing the way football he wants to play, he would take Brighton to another level. Obviously, from what I understand, there's a lot of reports are suggesting that Ange turned it down and said he doesn't want the job because he wants to stay at Celtic, which I completely understand.
Completely.
I think if Ange is going to leave Celtic, he's going to leave for a far bigger club than Brighton.
Think how hard he worked to win that Scottish title last season, to get Celtic back into the Champions League and have a go against Real Madrid and actually go toe-to-toe with them in the first half of the Champions League. I think Ange will see the bigger picture because he's a smart man. Playing against teams like that in Europe and showing what your team can do without being a defensive unit and sitting with 11 players behind the ball, he's going to get far more recognition for his next opportunity, which will be, no disrespect to Brighton, a bigger football club than Brighton. And he'll take that opportunity, but he always likes to finish his business. And I think he'll finish his Champions League campaign before he does. And the other one I was going to just mention there, if it was going to be Nottingham Forest manager Cooper, there's only time that he will go is in January, so he can sign another 26 players for Brighton. So you can count him out as well.
Yeah, no, I think for Ange as well, you said as well, Bridget, he's worked so hard to get in this position. I think also you get to a point where you got to enjoy the success as well. Like he's in a great spot now. I think sometimes, you know, you can think that the grass is greener on the other side, and you know, is he moving for money, and is it potentially a better decision?
It's not a no-brainer, right? Thomas, it's not a no-brainer. So if it's a Man United, Chelsea, or
yeah, of course, I get that.
Right?
I get that. But Brighton, I think, you know, that this is what we're talking about. I think, you know, it's better to enjoy what he's built at Celtic right at this moment than go to Brighton.
Yeah, and he's also seen the culture there and the size of the club and what Celtic football club is around, not just in Scotland but around the world globally. He's realised what it is, and I think he's really enjoying it and enjoying the ride and the journey, and long may it continue, because he knows, I don't think Ange is a money hungry man, and he knows that success will come off the back of what he does with Celtic.
Yeah, the money will come, absolutely. Yeah. And I agree with you, and he believes in his own ability, and he always has. He's always been incredibly confident of his own ability, and I agree, he will not leave Celtic until it's one of the big ones. And I think he will stay at Celtic potentially for a lot longer, based on the fact that unless someone like, certainly in the Premier League, say one of the top 6-7 teams in the country come in for him, then it may be a different question. But until such time, I think he'll stay.
Well, selfishly, Swarty, I hope he's still there, because I'm meant to be going up to interview him this week or next week. So if he's not there, then I've lost a bit of work. So
I think you're safe, mate. Yeah, I think you're safe.
I think you're right.
I'll ask him the question.
Thomas, if Kjetil Knutsen gets the job, that'll be a Norwegian manager coming in. We've got Thomas Frank, the Dane, who's at Brentford. Ostersunds, of course, in Sweden, was Graham Potter's training and proving ground. Is this a revival of the Scandinavian manager? I think sort of late 90s, that's when there was a huge influx of the Scandinavian influence into English football and out into global football. So are we seeing that have a revival, or are we just haven't been paying attention, and now maybe just some higher profile jobs are starting to get landed?
Oh, I think the Scandinavian managers have been at the forefront of, you know, just a modern style of coaching. I think, you know, just being more people involved, more personality involved. I think what Thomas Frank and also you look at Graham Potter, he's obviously had his influence there. And from what I hear with Kjetil Knutsen, I think, you know, he's done a similar job at Bodo Glimt. You know, he's won the league a couple of times, manager of the year, and obviously the success in the Conference League. You know, it just seems to be great man managers that has a very distinct philosophy of building, you know, culture. I think what Thomas Frank has done at Brentford is a good example, and Potter as well. So I think potentially Knutsen could be a good appointment. I think he would fit in. I'm not too aware of his playing style, but as a as a man manager and something that can follow on from Potter, I think potentially he could be a good signing.
Let's flip it around to managers that might be heading for the exit. Brendan Rodgers. Last week, Bridgie, we spoke at length about how he might be on the walking the plank, and you even said you wouldn't be surprised if it was announced in the next week or two that he might go. So no games at the weekend. Is it a stay of execution, though, because Leicester are away at Spurs this weekend? Will this be Brendan Rodgers' final game in charge?
The difference, I think Rodgers is going to see it out. I think if he was going to resign, he would have done it by now after the window for the terrible recruitment that they didn't bring in and let go. I think he's just sitting there to hopefully get his, you know, get told that he's no longer required so he can get paid up. That's what he'd be doing, Brendan, because, you know, you think the time and effort he's put into that football club, the success they've had, and sadly what's happened since COVID, they've had to sell, and it hasn't been any fault of Rodgers. I can't see him doing anything, and I think he's just waiting for that moment for them to say, enough is enough, see you later, thanks for your time. Will they do that? Do the Leicester owners have the money to pay him up? So at the minute, it's like a bit of a cat and mouse situation. We don't know what's going on, but there only is one certainty. Tottenham have got beaten the Champions League. They will bounce back and they will smash Leicester City this weekend.
The only thing I'd say, right, is yes, Leicester haven't been proactive, as we all know, in the transfer window, right? They've lost two very big name players. Kasper Schmeichel, obviously, arguably even more influential than any other player they've lost. Fofana, obviously, a huge talent. If you brought in another manager, if you look at Leicester City's squad, in my opinion, they're far better than being 1 point after six games. That current squad at the very least should be mid-table. I don't believe they should be at the bottom of the table right now. They shouldn't be on 1 point. So the question is, in my opinion, is has Brendan Rodgers' course run its shit? Has it run its course? Is it no longer? Has he got the ability?
The marriage is over for them, on and off the field.
For me, the squad is good enough to be a mid-table team at the very least. At the very, very bare minimum. Actually, if anything, I think they should be pushing for a little bit higher than mid-table with the current squad, even though they haven't actually brought in.
So why hasn't he been sacked then?
Well, Leicester, I think, has a history under this ownership of giving time to actually possibly too much time. You know, one would argue, right? I think it's only a matter of time before he's gone, because I don't see him turning around. I think he's lost the players. I think the way he's spoken to the media, the way he's talked about the squad, I think he's lost the change room, and I think it's only a matter of time before he's gone, and I think they have to do it sooner rather than later.
On my cycling trip, I had a catch-up in the southern France, and that was what I heard as well from someone that was recently at the club.
I wonder who that is.
I'm not going to mention any names.
But, Danish friend.
No, but what came out was that you know, since actually the Man United, since he didn't move on and didn't get that job, I think there was a decline. I think his interest, I think also with the recruitment, and what was said as well is that the dressing room, he had lost the dressing room. I think he's lost his energy and that spark that he had early on, I think, is not there anymore. So and I think you can sort of see that amongst the players, because I agree with you, Schwartz. I think, you know, they've got good enough players to be a lot better than they are now.
100%.
So potentially it is his final game.
Thomas, I'm glad you had a nice, sorry, a nice time. Now, let's quickly whip through, dad jokes here on the Gegenpod. Let's quickly whip through the Champions League results. Liverpool, we already spoke about, beating Ajax with a 89th minute winner 2-1. Bridgie, you touched on Spurs losing away to Sporting Lisbon 2-0, so they've now squared off their campaign. Bayern got the better of Barcelona 2-0. Robert Lewandowski missed a heap of chances for Barcelona, and his old club,
what
Bayern, Fernandes and Sané, scored the goals. Anything grab your attention just briefly from this morning's results? I know we're midway through the Champions League round as we record the pod this morning, but what jumped off the page at you?
the Barcelona Bayern match, or the Bayern Barcelona game, was absolutely incredible. It was end-to-end stuff. The young boy Pedri for Barcelona is just an absolute genius and a joy to watch. He was on the losing team today. Thomas Muller was the standout for Bayern as well, leading the line at his old age. And Lewandowski just could not score. He had two massive opportunities, and it was the goalkeeping union. Neuer was amazing. I loved watching it. I was glued to it, and what a game. And it was fitting because Bayern, Nagelsmann changed it at half-time. He brought on Goretzka, and they changed the game completely, and the atmosphere sounded incredible. So that was a huge game.
Bayern love beating Barcelona, don't they? Absolutely love it.
Nagelsmann's never been beat when he's played them.
I didn't have any doubts, because I don't think Barcelona is all that. And I think Lewandowski is a phenomenal player. And his record was at 6 games. Now it's 7 games, 9 goals for Barcelona in all competitions, which is pretty phenomenal. The interesting thing as well for me after tonight's game is obviously Spurs losing away at Sporting. More in that is that Son Heung-min was substituted 72nd minute, and Conte's come out and said he's not untouchable and he hasn't been playing well. I think it could all end in tears, because obviously Son's a very emotional man, and I think the love affair could end very quickly between those two.
I think we've seen him being a bit unhappy with his substitutions as well, and things are not going his way. But yeah, like of this morning, a couple of surprises. I think I didn't expect Leverkusen to beat Atletico. I think that was a bit of a surprise. And then Bruges winning quite comfortably away at
that's phenomenal.
At Porto,
yeah,
that I didn't expect that as well. So you know, so there's some teams that are, you know, that are doing well, and then. I think it was important for Liverpool to get that late goal. I think, you know, just to get a bit of momentum and sort of stem the flow a little bit. So some significant results, I thought.
Can I give a big shout out to an ex-Tottenham player playing against Tottenham today, a lad called Marcus Edwards. At Tottenham Hotspur for 4 years, went to Norwich on loan and was playing for Sporting against them. Absolute world beater. He looked like he had the balance. I think Pochettino might have said he was the new Messi. I'll tell you what, he never showed a glimpse of that tonight in this season. Phenomenal. Watch out for this kid.
No, very, very impressive. Nearly scored a marvellous goal too. One last question before we move off the Premier League teams, and that is Diego Costa coming back to Wolves. Schwartzy, how surprised were you that that's who they've gone for? If Kolasinac hadn't torn his ACL on his Premier League debut, they wouldn't have had to break glass in case of emergency. But Diego Costa, is he the answer? Has he still got it?
Look, his record since leaving Atletico Madrid hasn't been great. You know, Diego Costa is an interesting, really interesting character, really good guy, loves to have a lot of fun, but obviously can be very high maintenance, as Antonio Conte found out very much at Chelsea. Look, we all know what he was capable of when he was at Chelsea, a phenomenal player, robust, loved to fight, loved to be in people's faces, loved to fight with people, but then could deliver. Look, I think he could do a job at Wolves. Even though it's temporarily, even though it's just a bit part player, I think there's potential. It just depends. Look, I haven't seen him play for a number of years. I don't know where his fitness levels. I don't know, has he lost it? Because some players you see sometimes, they've been away for a little bit, they've dropped down a little bit, they've lost it a little bit, they're not quite there anymore. I don't know, but if he can find any of that ability that he showed at Atletico, at Chelsea, then he could be an incredibly shrewd signing. But there's a big if.
Wolves fans will be absolutely delighted that he managed to get his work permit, because there was talk that it could have been Andy Carroll as well. Now, you can't compare the two. I'm sorry, I know I'm from the Northeast, but please do me a favour. And when Diego Costa was announced, I don't know if any of you have seen it, but to the Wolves. Listeners as well, the unveiling of Diego Costa for Wolves with three Wolves on metal chains. I don't know who was more scared, the people that were doing the footage to film the Wolves, or whether it was Costa who was holding the chains thinking, if these dogs turn around, they're going to savage me. It was brilliant marketing campaign.
He said he was never been so scared as holding those Wolves.
Is that right? It was yes. Brilliant. What a way to announce a player. I thought it was absolutely brilliant to watch.
All right, you're listening to the Gegen Pod. We've got Mark Schwartz and Michael Bridges and Thomas Sorensen in the pod today. After this quick break, we'll talk about the WSL kickoff, a little bit of La Liga, and then we will get the panel's live reaction as we read out the Socceroos squad to take on New Zealand.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Gegen Pod. The WSL, it had to take this last weekend off because of the passing of the Queen, but it is back. Everyone wants to see if Chelsea can defend their title. Of course, Sam Kerr at the spearhead of that. And Mark Schwarzer, you actually caught up at Chelsea's training ground with Sam Kerr not too long ago. I know that the Matildas have been playing in the international window since you had that little chat, but you were focusing on all things football, including Chelsea. And what do you think of Sam and Chelsea's prospects of defending their title?
Look, I think they're in a really good position. I think Sam is seemingly as hungry as ever. Obviously, always has a point to prove, being regarded as one of the best players on the planet. She seemed very comfortable, very assured. And I think, you know what, I think for the women's game, full stop, it's brilliant how the WSL has grown in popularity, how the financial rewards for the girls has increased financially, like massively, and therefore it's created a home for a lot of these girls, rather than previously, like not so long ago, when you went through a resume of a girl, like their career history. I mean, they played at more clubs than the years they'd played football, which is just incredible. They often would play at two clubs per season because they played so few games in each competition, whereas now that's all changed a lot. And I think that brings stability. I think it brings the best out of players, and I think we're going to see even better from Sam Kerr moving forward. And I think also Chelsea is certainly going to be, again, one of the teams to beat this season in the WSL.
Well, we've got so many Australian connections in the WSL, and you can read about them on the Optus Sport website with some of the written content, of course. But let's just go around the panel and get your tip for who you think will win the title this season, whether it's Arsenal, who have, of course, got Steph Catley and Caitlin Ford, but they've got Beth Mead fresh off the Euros and Leah Williamson, the England captain. Man United, they finished fourth last season, but not that far back, and they've got the likes of Ella Toon and also Alessia Russo, who were stars at the Euros, and Adriana Leon, who we just saw dominate against the Matildas. Manchester City, they finished third. Mary Fowler, a Matilda, has joined them. And Liverpool, newly promoted, a bit of intrigue because they are trying to bridge the gap to those powerhouse clubs, having finally fought their way back into the top flight. So starting with you, Bridgie, and then Thomas and Mark, who is going to win the WSL this season?
Well, it was a quality finish last season. You know, Chelsea and Arsenal finishing 1 point behind each other. Well, I'm going to take the Man City girls. I'm going to go with Chloe Kelly and the girls. You know, they've got Steph Houghton there, a couple of the girls, Alex Greenwood, the girls that have had a fantastic Euros. So I think it's going to be a lot more competitive. I'm really looking forward to seeing the challenge at City throw down. And I think they're going to have a real good push. And the team I'm really looking forward to seeing this year is Liverpool. They got promoted. They beat Durham City in the division below last season. And Durham City are basically a team outside of the northeast between Sunderland and Newcastle and Middlesbrough. They obviously got an amateur men's team. They've got the women's team that have had huge success. I know the WSL were delighted and were so happy that Liverpool clinched the title away from them to see Liverpool in the top division. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they cope this season. So a big team coming up, and I'll say City will win it.
I'm leaning with Chelsea. I think it's going to be Chelsea Arsenal again. I think Chelsea have made some good signings, especially at the back. I think Buchanan is a good signing for them from Lyon. But I think the teams behind them, you mentioned Man United, I think they have moved closer. I don't think Liverpool will be good enough yet to get into European contention. But then Man City, Man United. So it's going to be a great season. It's going to be a 4-5 horse race with Chelsea as my favourites.
Yeah, I don't see much changing. Although I think Chelsea will be there or thereabouts. I'm going to go with Chelsea winning the league. However, I'm excited to see Manchester City better this season because of one player particularly. I want to see how well Mary Fowler.
Mary Fowler, you're going to see it. There you go.
Huge. Yeah. Prospect. I think she's a phenomenal player, and I think I think Hayley Russo, Lana Kennedy has done incredibly well for Manchester City, and I think Mary Fowler, for me, I'm really excited about to see how well she does in WSL. However, I still think Chelsea will be slightly too good for the rest.
Well, that is the WSL. It starts on Saturday morning at 4:30 a.m. Eastern Time with Arsenal against Brighton. Let's talk about La Liga now. Real Madrid, if you haven't seen the goals, check out the mini-match or the highlights, because after conceding first against Mallorca, they were dazzling in their 4-1 win. Barcelona, 4-0, Cadiz. Mark, you flagged it off the top. You're worried about Cadiz. 5 losses from 5, no goals scored, rock bottom. Where to from here?
I mentioned earlier I'm going to have a word with Awa. I'm going to get together with him, have some dinner with him, and see what the hell is going on, because it's not great, is it? Look, I thought last season they did incredibly well, Cardiff. They punched massively above their own weight. Staying in the league was huge. And I think, again, obviously the same thing applies. They're desperately just trying to stay in the league. They're a club that's a tiny, tiny club that have punched massively above their weight. But it's a tough one. It really is. And I fear for them. Losing your first 5 games is terrible. Obviously, it's the worst start you can absolutely have. I can't even say they're 5 games that you kind of think, well, yeah, okay, they're 5 really tough teams, but they weren't necessarily.
Now, the other big story in La Liga, and this has come through overnight, Atletico played in the Champions League and lost this morning, but Antoine Griezmann and this game of brinksmanship in the farcical situation where he is consistently subbed on after the hour mark so that Atleti do not activate a transfer clause with Barcelona. The latest reporting is that the clause has been negotiated down from about $25 million to from $40 million down to 25. So $15 million saving for what that is worth. Is that going to end the silliness with Griezmann basically only ever getting subbed on for half an hour or less per game?
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? Because he's such a talent. He's a great player. We all like watching him. And to think that he's being held in this trade embargo, in this saga, is an absolute shambles. I did actually come across something very similar when I was at Leeds United.
Oh, my
not
God.
Myself, Swartzy. Not God. Myself. I was always a sub for a reason. No, listen. Nick Bombi was at Leeds United. We signed him. I don't know whether it was from Everton or was it, where did we sign Bombs from, Middlesbrough or something, coming in. And I'll never forget, there was Peter Reid had taken over, and Bombs was an unbelievable player, an unbelievable professional. And you're scratching your head thinking, why is he not in the squad? Why is he not this? And it wasn't until about 6 weeks later that Bombs came in. He says, now I know why I'm not playing, lads. He says, I've got it in my contract that if I play one more match for Leeds United, basically, they've got to pay, after so many games, they've got to pay another fee. Well, Leeds were going through financial trouble, so Bombs couldn't play. And he was stuck in a very, very similar situation. So Peter Reid basically just said to him, listen, we know you're living in Hull, but you play for Leeds. Go and spend time at the weekend with your family. So Bombs would go and watch, it was so funny, Bombs would go and watch Hull FC Rugby League with his family instead of being at Elland Road for Leeds United, because the manager just said, go and do what you want, you're never going to play for this club ever again because I'm never going to play you. So yeah, I just hope Griezmann gets it sorted out for his sake and for the, you know, the people that love watching him.
Yeah, no, but when you look at it, you can have absolutely no sympathy with Barcelona. I know they're scrapping and, you know, they put themselves in this situation, you know, with obviously the financial trouble and where they are now, you know. So, you know, I feel for Griezmann. He's just been caught up in it, and hopefully, you know, they can find a solution quickly. But Barcelona, you know, they've dug themselves into this mess, really.
Now, they might need him, Atleti, because they lost to Leverkusen. They weren't great against Porto, but they had a heroic win, scoring twice in stoppage time, as all 3 goals came right at the end of the night. So their form's been a bit patchy. We've seen Real Betis get the jump on them in that race, maybe to be best of the rest behind the big two in Spain. And they have the Madrid derby on Monday morning, which is going to be pretty special at 5 a.m. So given the form line of Atleti, Schwartz, do you give them any chance of rolling Real Madrid here, or are Real just too hot to trot at the moment?
I don't think you can ever write them off in a Madrid derby. I think the way that Atletico Madrid is, Diego Simeone, I just don't think you can ever write them off, regardless of how bad a season they may be having. And certainly when you talk about Atletico Madrid being seventh in the La Liga at the moment, is not the start they would expect. The thing is, if they were to lose to Real Madrid on the weekend, that pressure is just going to get a little bit more more severe on Diego Simeone, and I think that's been on and off for the last couple of seasons.
I think this is his last season in charge of this club, Swartz, and I'm gonna go against you. I think I don't give them any hope against Real this weekend.
It's just a derby, though. I know what you're saying.
I know.
Technically, no, they don't have a chance, but it's a derby, and you just never know. And it's one of those games where you kind of go, this is a game that Simeone and Atletico Madrid are going to pull out of somewhere. They're going to get a result that you just kind of don't think is even possible.
Well, that game is 5 a.m. on Optus Sport on Monday morning, so a perfect way to start your week. Make sure you check that out. All right, we've been holding it until last. The chat about Australians overseas, here in Australia, the Aussie game in general, it's because the Socceroos squad has dropped for the two-game series against New Zealand, the farewell game in Brisbane, and then the game over the ditch in our last two matches before we go to Qatar to prepare for the World Cup. Now, we have not read out this squad to our Gegenpod panellists. We're going to get the reaction live in real time as I run through the names here. Shout out or stop me if you feel so inclined to really intervene. This is the 30-man squad that Graham Arnold has announced. Nathaniel Atkinson, Keanu Backus from St Mirren, as is Bayich, Martin Boyle, Jason Cummings, the cum dog is in from Central Coast Mariners, Harrison Delbridge.
What?
The former Melbourne City man, the Australian raised in America, played for FC Cincinnati, and then he went to Incheon United, who are having a great season in South Korea. Thomas, you would know Harrison Delbridge.
Yeah, no, a strong, honest defender. I think, why not? I think, you know, you need alternatives at the back, and I think he can do a job. He's got his limitations in certain areas, but, you know, I quite like it.
I was going to say, you're not selling it very well to me, mate.
No, but, you know, he's not a, you know, he's not world class, but he's still a good player.
Miloš Deganek is in, speaking of the MLS. Thomas Deng, just the one cap, so he's back in. He's been playing in Japan. Cam Devlin from Hearts. There's been a lot of calls for him.
Yay, hello, finally, yay.
Schwartz, happy about that one?
Absolutely. About time.
Continuing on, Mitchell Duke is in. Tyrese Francois on loan, of course, at HNK Gorica in Croatia. So another player that you've kept a close eye on, Mark, that gets his opportunity for a first cap.
No, I think he's a hugely talented young man. The problem is first team football, right? So as long as he's playing first team football, I think he's more than capable of holding his own.
Dennis Genro remains in the squad. Aydin Hrustić, fresh off his move to Verona. Jackson Irvine in great form for St. Pauli. Fran Karacic is in. Joel King is recalled. We saw his first couple of caps only recently. Garang Kuol from the Central Coast Mariners has been called up. Now, that is a big name. He's only about to turn 18. In fact, he turns 18 tomorrow. So what a moment for him. What a birthday present to be called into the Socceroos squad.
Absolutely brilliant. There's nothing better than seeing a youngster get his opportunity. And fair play. Even if you don't get any game time, you're going there to get experience. Swartzy and Thomas will tell you that when, you know, you see young players come through. And, you know, it's all about the experience. And I think that's a marvellous moment. And fair play to Graham for selecting him.
Continuing on, Matthew Leckie, Awa Mabil, Jamie McLaren, Riley McGree, Connor Metcalf, Aaron Moy, Andrew Redmayne, Trent Sainsbury is there, Matthew Ryan, also Ryan Strain, uncapped from St Mirren at the moment, former Adelaide United man, Adam Taggart, Marco Tilio, Bailey Wright, and then one last name, out of international retirement, Mitch Langerak. Mark Schwarzer, what do you make of
that? The goalkeepers union, let them go.
Look, I thought it was a big shame that he was out of the squad or decided to retire in the first place. I think he's very different to what we already have, right? So he brings a bit of variety. So I think he's one of, and certainly has been, look, up until Matty Ryan now being a regular at FC Copenhagen, he was the one goalkeeper I felt for Australia who's been playing at a very, very high level and playing consistently very, very well week in, week out, and deserved to be at the very, very least number two, if not pushing for number one. So it's great to see him back involved again.
Who has changed the mindset of Langerak to come out of retirement? Is that family and friends or is that Graham and his staff?
Probably a combination of things. I'm not, you know, look, I would like to think it's a combination. I'd like to think that he's thought, you know what, it's a World Cup. Last opportunity, last moment of maybe being involved. When I say last, I don't think it could be the last. I think he's more than capable of going on and playing another one. But in terms of he's already retired once, you kind of think, right, I've come out of retirement. Maybe this is his, he thinks this is his last hurrah or his opportunity of a last hurrah. And possibly Graham Arnold saying, look, at the time Matty Ryan wasn't playing, he was at Real Sociedad, there was no inkling that it possibly was going to move on, and obviously that move came last minute. But you never know what's going to happen between now and the World Cup, and you want all your players playing at the highest level. And look, you want the best players available to you to take to the World Cup, and Mitch Langerak is 100% in that top two.
It's a plus-plus for everybody involved, for him personally, for the Socceroos, for the fans and for the team, because it's competition for places for him and Matt as well. So yeah, I think it's brilliant.
For me, he's 100% the top two goalkeepers for Australia at this moment in time, without a doubt.
No, and again, I like it. You need options. You know, it's not going to change, you know, the team on the pitch because, you know, you got Matty Ryan who's going to play. But yeah, I agree. So Swartzy, it's always good to have options. Things can happen, injuries can happen, and you want someone who can go in and do a good job. I think what springs out to me is that what's the Tom Rogic situation? Is there any solution? Are we any closer to finding out if he has intentions to play at a World Cup, if there's talks between the two sides? Is he totally out now, meaning that he's not in this squad? I feel that intriguing, you know, because that's a big question mark.
The great news is, Thomas, he's signed for West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah.
But, and he's hopefully going to get game time before the World Cup. But is he with the right manager? Is he with the right club for that? I'm not too sure.
But you would still think that he would be in a 30-man squad if there was any sort of talks going on, especially with him joining West Brom, knowing that he's potentially going to play games. Why would you not include him if you were close? So to me, it put even more question marks around that, you know, that lead into the World Cup.
The only thing I would say is Graham Arnold knows what he's getting with Tom Rogic.
He's only
just signed for West Bromwich Albion. So the question is, has he said, look, Graham Arnold, has Tommy Rogic, both of them agreed, look, I know what you can do, I know what you bring, you go there, settle in, get your games under your belt, and off we go. Once the squad's announced, you'll be there. Because, look, if Tommy Rogic is fit and raring to go and wants to play for the Socceroos, for me, he's also in that squad going to Qatar. It's just whether or not he's ready and wants to do that. That's obviously, you know, that's up to him. That's a very personal decision. But I think for the Socceroos, and certainly if he's willing and able and fit, for me, he walks into that squad going to the World Cup.
All hail Mark Swartz. After 3 years of the Gegenpod, that is the most sensible and calculated remark has ever come out of your mouth, mate. Very, very good.
If I can potentially try to get something a bit more inflammatory then. Last week, Mark, we went around the Gegenpod and we asked about the Garanqual transfer rumours to move to Europe, some big clubs attached to him, Barcelona, of course, with that All-Stars experience of playing against him, having seen him firsthand, were one of the teams mooted. Now, Bridgie, Amy Duggan and Amy Harrison all said go in the January transfer window, go as soon as you turn 18. What counsel would you give to Garanqual, especially if he gets his first cap here, never mind if he plays well and potentially puts himself in the frame to go to the World Cup? His price will rise, his hype will rise. What advice would you give?
Get your head down. Don't get sucked in by all the attention. Don't let your head get pulled up into the clouds. Wherever you go, doesn't matter how big a club or how small the club is, you've got to keep doing the basics, keep doing the right things. Because we've seen it with young players already who in the past who've left Australia and thought that they'd already made it and got nowhere near it. And then after a couple of years ended up falling by the wayside. Just because you're a talent at this age doesn't mean it's going to continue forever. So wherever he goes, I'm the first person to say, go to Europe. Don't go anywhere else other than Europe. If you're good enough to make it in Europe, that's where you want to be. That's where you need to be. You need to be at the best level you possibly can. But you've got to, that's when the real work starts. It's hard enough getting there. It's even harder staying there.
Yeah, no, I would hope that he has the right people around him. I think, you know, because, yeah, I agree with Swartzy. One thing is your talent, but you need to have the mentality to... you know, to get into a tough environment. You know, I was around Daniel Asani when he left Melbourne City, and I had my question marks around him from a mental perspective, and he's willing to sort of roll his sleeves up and do the hard yards and put his head down, like Swartzy said. So you would just hope that he has people that can judge that and guide him the right way, because some players need a bit more time, potentially playing in the A-League for 1 or 2 years, because eventually your talent will shine through if you're good enough and if you put in the work. So that's the big question mark for me, because it you're just one among a lot of other talented players when you go to Europe.
I think you're right. The right people around him is important, right? But ultimately it comes from you. It's not about the people around you. It's about what you do and the type of mentality that you have and the type of commitment that you have. I just find it time and time again, it's too easy to blame the people around him. Like, I had no one. I had no one around me. I had no support. They were all from afar. Like when I say no support, I had no support right there with me. They were all from afar. So it was up to me to make those decisions and have the right mentality and the right commitment. And ultimately, that's what it comes down. You've got to take that responsibility yourself, and that's the key to me.
Yeah, I just see, you know, too many young players, especially in Australia, they come from this protected environment, and they have this, I don't know, corrupted feeling about where they stand and what is actually required. So that's why I'm saying that you need people around, experienced players, managers, who can then guide you, because I've seen it time and time again. You know, it's a different environment here, and if you're not, and how can you be prepared to go to Europe? I agree with you, Swartzy. Obviously, it has to come from yourself. You have to have the drive, the determination. But Australia is different than Europe, and that's my sort of point behind it.
One last one on this Socceroos squad, and you dropped his name there, Thomas, Daniel Arzani. I'm guessing if he's not made this 30, as much as he's shown flashes and impressed under our noses here with the Australia Cup run that MacArthur has been on, this probably means that there isn't going to be a chance for him to make another bolt for the World Cup squad. Does anyone think that maybe a MacArthur Australia Cup win or some great A-League form could be enough to force his way back in? Or are we interpreting this as no go for Daniel Arzani to make it to Qatar?
It's looking like a no go for me, but I would love to think that was an opportunity for him, because I love the style of play. I love any player that gets me excited, and he used to do that. I know he's had injury troubles. He's gone around. I'm just hoping that there is that glimmer of hope that Arnie will not just shut the door on him and give him an opportunity. Who knows?
Look, I think Daniel Arzani was rightfully on that for Russia, was rightly on that plane because of that X factor he had in the A-League, the glimpses that he showed, right?
Plan B.
But then we're 4 years down the track and you can't, and I don't think we've seen any of those glimpses. And you're right, part of it's because of injuries, but then since then there's been more than that, right? So there's all these different question marks as to why he is where he is right now. And going back to Australia, you can't put on 2 or 3 months of decent football and expect to be called up for the national team. However, between now and the World Cup squad being announced and going to the World Cup, there is still time. But he's got to put his foot down and he's got to play out of his skin to justify any chance of being selected. So I'm not ruling it out, but at this stage I'm saying unlikely, because his track record speaks volumes since being at the World Cup in Russia.
Yeah, I agree with you, Swartzy, that he's got a chance. But we always got to remember that Arnie had him at the Olympics as well. And I think the positives and the frustration that he showed there of obviously his glimpses of magic, which we all know he has, but then his lapses of concentration, not tracking back, not you know, those things that his game has been lacking, I think he showed there. And I think that's the question mark that Arnie has. Can he trust him? You know, not just to do a 5-10 minute job, but can he actually be trusted in a vital situation at a World Cup?
Yeah, but that's his job now to prove it, right? So it's his job now to prove any of those doubts, to go out there, perform week in, week out, and put himself in the shop window. That's ultimately what he's doing.
We all agree Narzani, that is on top form, deserves to be there because we all admire what he's got to offer.
But this is what we've seen 4 years ago, right? So yes, we've not seen much of it or very little since then. So for me, it's a massive outsider, and he has to be outstanding between now and the World Cup to have any chance of being in that squad.
One last topic for us on the Gegenpod, just a quick one. Sydney United making it into the Australia Cup final. Mark Schwarzer, as a Marconi man, barely a stone's throw away over at Adenza Park, it was one of the great afternoons for Sydney United to beat the Brisbane Roar. They've already knocked off Western United to make it through. If you're listening to this on Wednesday night or after Wednesday, you'll know who they're playing in the final, whether it's MacArthur or the Oakley Cannons. But what about this result? I mean, the nostalgia is always in overdrive when the Australia Cup's on, but this was a really good footballing performance too.
Sydney United obviously in the final, and there's Oakland Cannons against MacArthur FC. Do I want Sydney United to win the FA Cup? No, because they're like our rivals at Marconi. So no, do I want them to win? No. So Oakley Cannons or MacArthur FC, please win the FA Cup.
Mark just huffing the copium. All right, Schwartzy, thank you. Thomas, I mean, you've seen the Australia Cup. You've played in it firsthand. Did you see a day like this coming where we would finally have an NPL team in the final and we could potentially have two?
Yeah, let's see if Oakley Cannons can, they're playing at home against, the A-League side. So that's another chance. I think it's always been in the cards. I think the way the cup is structured in the off season for the A-League teams, they're not quite there. It's always been a little bit favored, but I think it's a great story. And this is what the cup needs. And I think, now we have this talk about a second division, and so hopefully it can sort of spur things on. I think give it a bit of momentum, because we need something more to happen. In Australian football in general, and hopefully some of these results can just pop up on everyone's screens and give the cup as well a bit of momentum and a bit of magic.
And of course, that's what it was designed for and brought in. The FA Cup in England, as we all know, anybody can win it. That's what the FFA Cup was done in Australia. And I just thought it was fantastic to see the quarterfinals. You had Oakley Cannons are in there. They're going up against MacArthur in the semis. Sydney United have done it against Brisbane Roar. There was another team in there as well who I'm very close with, is Peninsula Power as well. They had an unbelievable run in there in the FFA Cup and just missed out 1-0 to Sydney United. So for me, it would be great to see a non-A-League team win the FFA Cup, and hopefully it just puts something out to say, Australia, hurry up and sort out a second division and a few more tiers so we can get promotion and relegation, we can get some accountability, because there is teams, all right, might not be geared up financially, but player-wise and quality-wise, there's a lot of good people and a lot of good players. And the more games we have in Australia that are at a competitive level, the better it is for the whole game and the bigger picture of Australian football in the future.
Yes, thank you to our panel. And don't forget, the Gegenpod is on every Wednesday during the season. Make sure you subscribe and rate us 5 stars. We've got a huge week of content coming up on Optus Sport. Off the back of our World Cup chat, check out Tommy Orr's column on Thursday. You can see it on the Optus Sport app and website, talking about what it's like in the months leading up to a World Cup. La Liga kicks off at 5 a.m. on Saturday morning with Valladolid versus Cadiz. And don't miss Atletico versus Real, the Madrid derby at 5 a.m. Eastern time on Monday. We've got J-League. If you are listening on Wednesday, then Yokohama F. Marinos, Kevin Muscat's team, play tonight at 8 p.m. against Kyoto Sanga, or you can see them live at 3 p.m. on Sunday against Consadole Sapporo. The Premier League starts on Saturday morning with a double at 5 a.m. Eastern, Aston Villa versus Southampton and Nottingham Forest versus Fulham to kickstart your weekend. And if you've been hanging out for the WSL to return, all 6 games are live and exclusive on Optus Sport, starting 4:30 a.m. on Saturday morning with Arsenal against Brighton. Don't miss Liverpool, newly promoted, against the champions Sam Kerr's Chelsea, 2 a.m. Eastern on Monday. All of this live and on demand on the Optus Sport app. I've been your host, Teo Pelizzeri, and on behalf of Mark Schwarzer, Thomas Sorensen and Michael Bridges, thanks for listening to the Optus Sport Football Podcast. This was the Gegenpod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.